Ever since I've connected my VR headset to the computer, it weirdly defaults the microphone in our recording system to the Quest.
Zuckerberg is listening.
He's listening. Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that asked, Jean who? I'm your host, Stephen Levine, and my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared, I thought you were going to spit up your drink.
I thought about it. How long have you been holding that one for, Stephen?
Till they were all voted out.
Which I suppose you knew was coming eventually.
Yes, correct. How's it going, Jared? Welcome.
Hi, it's nice to see you again. It's been so long. It's been a week.
It's been a week, yeah.
It's been a long week, though.
It has been a long week, Jared. Yes, I have been down for the count. You have been hosting weddings without me.
Yeah, you abandoned me.
Don't even. I abandoned you. I abandoned the podcast. I abandoned everyone. I'm sorry, guys.
I'm actually really proud of you for not pushing yourself, or you were so sick that that was physically impossible.
A little of both.
Yeah. Michaela and I, Stephen's spouse, because I drove Michaela out there, and we were there the day early because we were part of the wedding party. We're talking about, like, you know, what were the odds that you would just show up a shell of your former self and still try to make it through the wedding? And it was pretty high. The odds were pretty high.
It wasn't zero. I give you that much. But yeah, it got to the point where I woke up and I could not physically talk. Like, you wake up in the morning and your throat is on fire and you're like, that's not good. But more,
I hate that feeling.
Really, more it's like, that's not good. Oh no.
I'm turning into an old person.
I'm dying slowly.
Yeah. No, that sounds like you're dying quickly.
Yeah. It was not fun. I was not having a good time.
And so what do you do, audience, I ask you, if you're supposed to be co-emceeing a wedding, in the morning of, it turns out that you will be the only MC. You go to the most obvious of things. You make a sock puppet. You call it Stephen LaSock. You give it a French accent. And you riff.
Honestly, I thought it was a pretty good riff. Way to go.
Thank you. I was doing a lot of dumb bits. The old people had no idea what was going on.
Oh, okay. I never saw anything that you did. I got the description from you, probably already drunk, and it was entertaining while I was sitting there on my own playing video games.
Everyone that wasn't old loved it.
Thought it was great.
Everyone that was old tolerated it. But it was a Christmas-themed wedding, so I think they were already confused as to what was going on.
Sure. Was it a Christmas sock?
No.
Damn it.
Fuck you. Fuck you. I put it together in 10 minutes with super glue, a $5 craft bag from Target, and a dream.
Nice.
The bit I kind of fell into naturally was to get people's attention. I would go, if you can hear my voice, then blah, 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 blah. And those are the ones I think those people really didn't get, where I'd be like, if you can hear the sound of my voice, it is your conscience speaking. Why are you still not listening to the man with the microphone? You're at a wedding, and we're going into speeches.
Oh, my God.
You should stop talking to those around you.
I thought you were going to do the, if you can hear my voice, clap once, like we're in elementary school.
No, it was one of those things where I started talking, and that's probably the root that formed that bit, uh-huh. But I was not going to do that.
Good.
So my brain just made something up, and then I went, I can repeat this 12 times, and doing something different each time.
Yep.
I think one of them was like, if you can hear my voice, it is your stomach saying that dessert is ready. It was very dumb. I also got chided for giving football game updates at a gay wedding.
Yeah, I don't know why you did that.
Because several people I saw were either watching the game or checking like play-by-plays on their phone every so often. So I went, I'm just going to make this easier for them.
Uh-huh. Do you want to give an update to that before I say what I'm going to say about that?
Steven, you already gave the people an update. And I'm very proud of you for coming out as a Lions fan.
Don't ever touch me and say those words again.
My favorite part is by the time this comes out, that will be deleted.
Yes, it's going to be gone.
We're going to leave that up. It's just an announcement that we weren't going to have an episode on that day.
Yeah, so for those of you who are not caught up and are listening to this after its initial release date, I had Jared. I was like, Jared, No, you offered. You're like, I'm going to put something up to just let everyone know that the episode isn't coming out today.
Yes, because I had a plan.
Which is what we do. And I'm like, cool. That's great. Thank you.
And also because I figured you didn't have a voice, so you couldn't record an audio thing.
So I went into work that day, that Monday, to like grab some things, do what I needed to do, and then go home. And I didn't listen to it on the train, but I saw that it was posted. I got into my office. I got to my desk, and I was like, let me just see what he said.
What kind of bullshit are we signing up for right now?
And
he sits down at his desk.
Yeah, what did I text you exactly?
It's like, you're a bastard or something.
You motherfucker.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah. Oh, that's exactly what it was. Yeah, you motherfucker. I do not consent to the things that Jared put into my mouth. So,
oh my. I don't like that.
I am upset. I am furious. But, like, you know what? We lost a game. So be it.
Yeah.
I will state what's your coach's name again?
Dan Campbell.
I will state what Dan Campbell said to our head coach. See you in 2 weeks.
Do you want to watch the game together on Monday so we can see the last Viking games of the season?
I will fucking end you. Well, no, it's going to be a weird game because they had to shift it from LA, which is currently on fire, to Phoenix.
America is currently reenacting a song of fire and ice, and climate change is real.
Yeah.
Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah. And I was like, you know what? I should go check, see what tickets are running, because that kind of shift makes ticket prices absolutely plummet.
Oh, sure.
And I was right. You can find bowl-level tickets for $125,
$150. Let's go.
But I can't find a flight worth... Like, the flights are 6 times more expensive than the tickets.
We can start driving right when we're done recording.
No.
Okay.
I will not.
Can you do me one favor?
Uh-huh.
Please never use the phrase, I didn't consent what Jared put into my mouth ever again.
I knew what I said.
Please find a different way to phrase that.
No. This is what I have stated. This is what I will live with.
I don't want that existing in a clip.
See, I said what... a more of a non-literal standpoint. Like, These are words that Jared is putting in my mouth. However, the other way stands too. I don't want anything that is coming from you in my mouth.
Sure. It's just one of those has horrible implications.
Yeah. Your point?
Yeah.
My point stands.
Sure. I mean, I did blast you on our feed, so I guess I deserve it. With the announcement, I blasted you on our feed.
You say that after you're like, Steven, choose your words better. And then
blasting.
You say,
no, blast.
You're going
to
blast me on the feed.
Yeah, that's a thing that I know what the youths are saying.
All right. You heard Jared. He's blasted me. So, oh, boy. We're off to an interesting start here, Jared.
Yeah. Do you still have sick brain?
A little bit. This week has been a little tough. It's, I don't know, like, the words have been hard to find.
Never heard of it. Never had that happen once.
But video gaming, I was really good at all week. Maybe because I just wasn't thinking. I was just doing.
What were you playing? Like, is this like competitive games?
A little bit. I played a little bit of Rocket League. I was really good at. I nearly won a tournament. I played, I don't know, for whatever reason, I'm like, oh, because I was playing Astrobot. Astrobot brought me to Crash Bandicoot. I'm like, yeah, platformer. One of the whatever bots is wearing a Crash costume. So I'm like, let me go touch the original Crash like remake.
Mm-hmm.
And I pushed through that first one. And my God, that game and that series is wildly unfair.
Yes.
In different ways.
Now, I owned a PlayStation 1.
Okay, I did not.
I owned a PlayStation 2.
Also did not.
Do you want to know, just take a guess. What age do you think I figured out that Crash Bandicoot was more than a kart racer?
27.
That's pretty close. It was shortly after college. It would have been from a YouTuber named Kidicarus. So, somewhere around like 24, 25.
Oh, no. I grew up seeing people play Crash Bandicoot, and it always amazed me because I'm like, oh, this is a cool, like, it's Mario, but like it's challenging.
It's the Dark Souls of Mario.
And Yeah. It has so many levels of, all right, you can just scroll through and just play to beat the game, and that's it. That'll take you a little bit. Or you could play and try to get all of the, like, unlockable, or the diamonds or whatever it is, the gems.
Yeah.
And that'll take a lot longer. Or you can go back to try to get the platinum trophy, and you have to speed run all of those levels to a very intense level. And I'm like, but I want the platinum trophy, but I don't want to do this.
I'm very glad I don't have that mind goblin, that I don't need to get
mind goblin these nuts.
God damn it. Mind, you say mind goblin. No, but mind goblin these nuts is pretty good. That's pretty good. I'll give you that.
Thank you.
Yeah, I don't need to get every side thing in a game unless they are somewhat easily achievable. Like, if there are ones where I'm like, I'm going to spend 10 hours to get this and it's worth nothing, fine. If it's Tactical Breach Wizards where it's like, oh, doing specific strategies in the level gives you these, then, like, yeah, that's just, like, a bonus challenge I want. Or, like, the strawberries in Celeste. I was not fucking finding those strawberries.
Nope.
No way. That was not worth my time.
Nope.
I don't care about the trophy.
But it's, like, it's so obtainable because I've played these levels. I know how to beat these levels. Mm-hmm. But it takes so long to do it, and to do it perfect.
I don't like having to do games perfectly. I want the game to be so hard that doing it at all feels like perfection.
I think Mario has figured out this curve of challenge where you can play through the game. The levels are not really that challenging. There might be a challenging one every once in a while.
A game made literally for children.
Yeah. There are special world levels that are much more difficult and offer some sort of challenge. And then if you decide to beat all of those, then there's usually one hardcore challenge to, like, absolutely grind your teeth into. And that I'm cool with. But then doing that as an entire game, oh, man. I never played Super Meat Boy, but that was my... Actually, no, I did play a little bit. That was my experience with Super Meat Boy.
I hate the animation of Super Meat Boy.
It's pretty ugly.
Yeah, it's not for me. That, like, 90s, like, Ren and Stimpy graphics, just
grunge.
Like, I don't like it in my animation, so right. I couldn't get into it, but it looked like a really good game.
You know what I like in my animation? Emails. If you want to email us, feel free to do so, survivortbt@gmail.com, or you can message us on Reddit, u/survivortbt, or on our Patreon. You can sign up, be a free member, and still message me.
And not me.
Not Jared, because we're avoiding spoilers. First email I'm going to go with from Carl. Carl's episode 10/11 email. I plead the fifth on whether or not I am a freak. Thank you, Carl. Picture the episode. Oh, it's the children who are at the Shaolin Temple who are watching Denise, very unimpressed.
They're like, what the fuck is this?
What's going on here? I like the girl on the bottom right's reaction to Denise's moves. It's like some combination of confusion, fear, and respect.
There's also a chance that this is the first time that they have seen someone that isn't from the temple or isn't Chinese.
That is, like, a possibility.
Like, and maybe that's not true. Like, maybe they have TV and multimedia. I don't know, like, what level of, like, separated from the world Shaolin temples are. They kind of built it up like they are, but that doesn't mean that they are. But there is a non-zero chance that, like, these are the first non-Chinese people they have ever talked to.
I bet that this is a very movie, theatrical kind of a way to think about it. But I'm sure someone has, like, hey, you know what? My life is shitty. I'm going to go pack up my bags, go live at a Shaolin temple, learn something, and, like, backpack around the world. I think that there is not a zero chance that something like that had happened.
Yeah. I just was thinking, looking at that girl's reaction, I was like, yeah, this is something so strange for her, probably.
White people are weird.
Yeah. What is this person doing? Why are they here? What is this camera?
Yeah. Notes. It's always fun when you guys get to a super iconic episode. If you're curious about the fan reaction to James going home, obviously they were disappointed, but there wasn't really this huge wave of criticism towards him you might expect. It was more of a, aw, man, how could you? You had two idols type reaction.
The camera does not play it like James is dumb. Like, the camera treats Jamie like she's dumb for the fake idol, but they do not treat Jamie like he's dumb, or James like he's dumb for holding the idols. They treat everyone else like they're really smart.
Yeah, I also think there is some level of they had to everyone work in coordination to, like, pull this over on him and, like, not let him even think that he was in danger, even slightly. No whiffs. Like, they executed it really well.
And it helps that James is an arrogant person. Yeah. He's not sitting there, like, in confessionals being like, they would never get rid of me. He's just like, maybe if I feel something, I'll pull it out. And then so it sets the stage for, wow, they did a really good job, instead of if John Robert had two idols.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine a fucking timeline where John Robert had two idols.
I can't.
This season would be awful.
Over time, though, as more fans started to care, or as fans started to care more about strategy, he started to receive more and more flack. Do you think that's just because we've seen more Survivor and it's like, this guy?
Yeah, I mean, there is something to be critical there. I think we were.
We were.
Like, you don't have that many immunities left at that point to use these on. Like, if you win one or two, then you, like, you're going to keep one in your pocket anyway by the end of the game.
Yeah.
So I think it deserves criticism for sure.
The history nerd in me is annoyed by this episode. Number one. While Chinese artisans may have independently created their own unique version of an abacus without outside influence, in parentheses, and apparently no one knows if they did or not, the first things we would call abacuses definitely did not come from China. Mesopotamia got there, according to Wikipedia, about 2,500 years first before then, and other places like Greece and Persia also beat them to it. And number two, throwing stars are totally a Japanese thing.
Yeah, I know they are Japanese. I don't know if they are also Chinese, because I don't know how old they are. But yeah. No, I mean, it's certainly interesting. Like, the questions aren't as objective as they could be.
Yeah. I get that Chinese government wants their country to come off as super cool and everything, but man, so many cool things were invented in China. Do they really have to resort to plagiarizing other places' inventions? It's a good point.
America, England, and other predominantly white countries do not have a monopoly on colonialism and erasing old history.
There is that.
There is Tibet. There is the Uyghur Muslims. Like, it's just because we're not as surrounded by it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Yeah. Too bad Bruce wasn't on this reward. He would have tried to perform with the martial artists or something.
Honestly, Bruce might have. Bruce could have been really good at it, for all we know.
Possibly, who knows?
I mean, clearly he was studied in something, because he built like a whole ass, like, really nice Zen garden.
Yeah.
Who knows what kind of shit Bruce was doing on the side for 50 years?
Ugh. Okay, well, I'm gonna move on to Michael. Michael says, "Hey guys, happy holidays. I didn't have a chance to listen to your last three pods covering the Jean Robert through James boots, nor did I get the chance to write an email about the Jamie boot, so I'm going to try to catch up since I was able to listen to all three episodes while driving from Ohio back to Illinois."
That is one of the worst drives I've personally ever done, is through Ohio and Indiana, so I'm so sorry.
It's not great.
There's nothing. There's just nothing.
Well, especially, I hate that toll road through Ohio.
Everyone. Yeah, the turnpike, yeah, it's the worst.
It's awful. So for Jamie, I tend to think that her playing the plank of wood is not as dumb as the edit makes it out to be.
Right.
Especially since the hidden idols were not yet standardized in their role or general way in which they are identifiable to players. I'm not sure if Jamie is just saving face with her insistence that she knew it wasn't the idol, but either way, it makes for a more compelling storyline. So I see why they did it the way they did, even if it's not entirely accurate.
Yep, it's more fun if she is made to look stupid.
To further explain the Susan Lucci reference, she is slash was one of the best known soap opera stars, with All My Children being one of the biggest soaps of its era, especially in the 80s. Her character, Erica Kane, was a feminist icon, being, among other things, a fashion mogul and independent-minded woman. Wow, you're digging real deep in here. I love this.
Damn.
She was also the first character on any show to get an abortion, and the show handled it smartly as it addressed social issues in a progressive manner for their time, i.e. abortions in the 80s, anti-Vietnam War in the 70s, LGBTQ characters in the 90s/2000s.
Damn.
Interracial couples. Damn, it's doing great. Anyway, Susan Lucci was constantly nominated for Best Actress at the Daytime Emmy Awards, but never won, so it became a running meme and joke that she'd always been nominated, something she leaned into. She ended up winning in 2000, I want to say, and it was sort of like this, it was a let's rectify this moment.
Okay.
Anyway, All My Children unfortunately came to an end on ABC in 2011 with a short streaming revival on Hulu in 2012 and 2013, but it was the early days of streaming and unfortunately failed despite being somewhat good. Revivals of it have been stuck in production hell, but several actors slash actresses got their start on All My Children, including Josh Duhamel from Transformers and Kelly Ripa. You're probably wondering why I know so much about All My Children. My mom grew up with the show and watched it for its entire run. In fact, the reason we had a VCR and eventually DVR and expanded cable packages back in the day was so she could record it either on ABC or the SoapNet channel as she worked during the day. So basically, growing up, it was a nightly routine in our family to watch All My Children recordings. And over time, my brother and I got invested and paid attention to the storylines and characters. This all being a long-winded explanation to say that Jared's reading of it as always a bridesmaid is correct, but it was a super cool reference by Courtney and made me laugh at the time as I understood exactly what she meant. That's wild.
Thank you for the lore dump. I love that.
Yeah, that's great.
My mom watches Days of Our Lives still.
Oh, really?
Yeah. As far as I know, she still watches it every day it comes out.
I remember my mom watching one of them, but I don't remember what it was. But she also worked during the day, so I don't know how that was possible. Anyway, I don't have too much to say about Frosty other than I always forget that his given name is Michael.
It's Frosty.
When thinking about how, unfortunately, people with my name tend to have a poor track record on the show, though Frosty is easily one of the better ones. Unfortunate. While the flirtmance with Courtney gets a lot of airtime, there have been persistent rumors that Frosty and Todd had a flirtmance as well. There used to be some mildly coupley photos on Survivor Sucks of them, but not sure if they were just having fun or whatever.
Frosty does give Bi King energy.
He could, yeah. Speaking of Survivor Sucks, you mentioned Amanda's blurring for the first time, and it was at the time her necklace on message boards was Blurranda, or her nickname on message boards.
Blurmanda.
Blurmanda. That's funny. Because of how often she had to be blurred. I think she stated post-show that her shorts/underwear thinned out over time and exposed more and more of her butt.
Yeah, that makes sense. They aren't. It's not fabric that's meant to survive 39 days in the Chinese jungle.
It's truly okay. You can give her new underwear or like a bikini bottom. I won't be too mad.
It's not a competitive advantage for someone to not have to have their whole ass out.
You also touched on Eric's strength in the game. He's very well liked to the extent that even Todd liked him a lot. While the Fei Longs do a good job of compartmentalizing their personal likes, I could see a world where Eric makes it to the end and wins. However, he objectively plays the James boot wrong.
Yeah.
PG has the right idea that they could get Todd out if James plays an idol, but Eric voting along with the Fei Longs would have screwed PG over because it would have been a 1-1 tie with one vote PG from James and one vote for Todd from PG.
That's a really interesting point. It does help PG and Eric more to tell James that they're going after him so he should use the idol and for them to vote Todd.
It does. That could have been a huge...
Because then there's another idol out of play. I mean, there'd still be one in play, but whatever.
And James doesn't trust his former people.
She's gaslit herself into thinking James is her best friend in the game. And Todd, who they think is the glue that's holding everything together, goes away.
Uh-huh.
and all trust is eroded.
Honestly, would have been a baller move. Something else to keep watch on slash note is that PG and Amanda kind of have a bit of an acrimonious relationship.
That's this entire episode.
Yeah. So as seen here, where they kind of snipe at each other, I would say out PG's biggest failing is her lack of social game and general abrasiveness. But yes. I would always bear in mind the cultural differences between her and a largely white cast.
Yep. The other thing I would say that is her weakness that doesn't have to do with that in particular is her stubbornness with who she tries to go after. Like, we've kind of joked about for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
Go after James. Oh, we're in the final five. Now I'll have a conversation with Amanda for the first time. Like, you have not done your due diligence.
Yeah. Though Jared leaving her off the potential final female favorite candidates made me raise an eyebrow, as she was very well liked at the time by the internet fan base. So I'm wondering if he just forgot her or if he thinks she wouldn't be a returning candidate.
Only one woman on the season comes back for fans versus favorites, and I just don't think she has more of a following than Courtney or Amanda.
Valid.
I'm not saying she won't come back in like a second chances or... It should be a long shot for Heroes versus Villains or another. I don't know the other returnee seasons. Like, it's a possibility, but I don't see her beating out Courtney or Amanda.
Sure. Okay, this was lengthy, and there's more I want to say about Denise especially, but I'll save that for a future email. Thank you, Michael. That's
Finale mailbag.
Yeah. I'm going to leave it there because I think I've talked, but we do have a couple more I want to save, mostly because my voice is still recovering, so oops. I promise we'll say more. We got the finale mailbag. Thank you, everyone. Big love. Bumper.
All right, so this episode came out on December 13th of 2007. A couple things I pulled in the week between episodes. 73rd Heisman Trophy Award, Tim Tebow.
Yep, there it is.
Tim Tebow.
He was a monster college quarterback.
Yeah, and he won a playoff game in the NFL.
That he did.
Which is more than Sam Darnold will do. Two car bombs go off at the Constitutional...
fucking guy. My God.
I love you. Two car bombs go off at the Constitutional Court building in Algiers and the United Nations office. An estimated 45 people are killed in the bombing. No details on why or anything like that, but probably was a big deal. The number one song on the charts has not changed. It is still No One by Alicia Keys.
Sure.
And the top five movies are Hitman, Beowulf, No Country for Old Men, Enchanted, and number one, His Dark Materials, The Golden Compass.
Oh, yeah.
Are you familiar with His Dark Materials, The Golden Compass, or just The Golden Compass, as it's listed everywhere except for the top five movies?
This was one of those movies that I was definitely persuaded not to watch from the Catholic Church.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
This one, I remember very specifically, this one and Da Vinci Code. I think both for different reasons.
I was going to say, they're very different movies.
They are, but Da Vinci Code... They were like, it's blasphemous. Whereas I think the Golden Compass was like, I don't remember a whole lot about it, but it was like hinting at anti-Catholicism, right?
Let's get into it.
Okay.
Lyra Belacqua, Dakota Blue Richards, lives in a parallel world in which human souls take the form of lifelong animal companions called daemons. So demons with an E. So
that might be why.
Dark forces are at work in the girl's world, and many children have been kidnapped by beings known as gobblers. Lyra vows to save her best friend, Roger, after he disappears too. She sets out with her daemon, a tribe of seafarers, a witch, an ice bear, and a Texas airman. That should be your friend circle. Every friend circle must have a witch, a seafarer, an ice bear, and a Texas airman on an epic quest to rescue Roger and save her world. Steven, what do you think this rate on Rotten Tomatoes?
I don't think this was super great because I don't think they made a sequel and this was like a series of books. So I'm going to go with a critic score of 63, an audience score of 60.
Pretty good instincts. A little lower than that, but critic score of 42, audience score of 51. And it says, without the bite or controversy of the source material, The Golden Compass is reduced to impressive visuals, overcompensating for lax storytelling.
Sure.
So it sounds like they took the teeth out of it, and then people were like, no, but it sucks. I've heard the TV show's pretty good, though.
Okay, the one with Lin-Manuel in it?
Oh, well, he's in everything.
He is. He cannot be stopped.
Lin-Manuel's on this podcast right now. You just don't know it.
I have to admit something, Jared.
I'm very proud of you, whatever it is.
I hate you. I don't make Deez Nuts jokes often, but I had the pull to make another one when you said, do you say goblins?
Oh, yes, yeah. Or something like that. Noblars or something like that. Yeah. Noblar these nuts.
I was like, oh, man. It's there. And that's not what this show is, but man, I really
not on your side. It's not.
Okay. Anything else?
No, that's all. I have a couple things from the from the last time on, though.
Oh, sure. Well, okay. Well, before you start, I have to do the thing. Episode 13, hello. I'm still a person.
You think I'd know how this goes by now?
No.
The format of our show.
Okay, go ahead. Tell me about the last time on.
So I didn't comment on it before, but the reward challenge, the middle of it being like a yin-yang symbol of the two tribe colors, was pretty cool.
It's pretty cool.
I like that. But the other thing was, it starts the whole episode from the last time on of making PG this big hero.
Mm-hmm.
This is giving Dan from Panama vibes, where suddenly, like, she gets this glowing episode that I thought was going to end with Todd leaving, because that's the way that this story makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it's just an episode to make PG look good, which I don't hate. Just kind of surprised by it. And it starts before the episode even starts. Like, proving PG was a force to be reckoned with. I literally went on, huh?
I'm sorry?
Like, the whole recap focused on her.
Yeah.
It's a weird choice.
It is a weird choice. And, you know, I get it. I get that they're trying to do a little bit of, like, hey, look at this person who's fighting hard. They love the underdog story.
Sure.
They want to make her... what's his name from Palau?
Give me a description here.
The person who was like fight. Well, never mind. I'm thinking, I'm mixing my seasons together. It's who was our big strong man that Jeff fawned over.
Oh, our Terry from Panama?
Terry.
Yeah, we're mixing Terry and Dan, where we're giving, like, the glowing, like, we love this person so much. And then, yeah, huh.
Yeah.
And look how cool they are. Because they didn't pretend Dan was good at Survivor.
No.
You couldn't.
No. But he was just a delightful human. We want him to go far. But, yeah, PG's not that.
No.
But I can see a little bit of that, a little bit of a misdirection to try to make you think, hey, she has a shot.
It made for a good episode.
It did.
Don't hear what I'm not saying. I enjoyed the episode. Yeah, let's get more into it, because this isn't... this episode feels so unique.
Do you have more words to describe that?
I will as we go.
Okay. So we start the episode, and... PG talks about how she's definitely not the most popular person left. She's an outsider. She's on her own. She needs some help.
Yeah, and she says this like it's a new thing. Like, oh, people don't like her right now. And I'm like, PG, people haven't liked you the whole time. I mean, and that sounds crass. Like, I like PG.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, episode one is them maybe voting off PG. Like, she's been on the chopping block multiple times. She's been in the Minority Alliance since the merge. This is not a change for you.
No, but there was always a glimmer of hope. And I think right now, she's finding zero glimmers of hope.
Yeah.
She is extinguished.
Yeah.
Both literally and figuratively here.
And before that, we get one little thing of the night before at Tribal of them being like, oh, Eric's such a good guy, which, that aged poorly.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
But we also have Denise here. Denise saying, you know, I played it safe with this last vote. I didn't want to, like, make too many waves, and it could have been the biggest mistake that I have ever made. Do you agree?
I forgot she said that.
Mm.
Because then she goes and does the same thing this episode.
Yes.
So, no. I think that her not getting rid of Todd here is maybe the biggest mistake she made. And I guess we don't know that Amanda wanted to do that for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you had the chance to do the same thing you wanted to do last episode in a much better position because you were guaranteed to win the vote.
Yeah. She certainly wasn't giving green light vibes to Amanda when Amanda was talking about it, though.
No. It's bizarre. No, I think going to Rocks last episode would have been dumb. Getting rid of Todd this episode would have been much smarter than that for Denise to try to take over the game.
You know, that's fair. Anyway, we get tree mail, and it's a bunch of arrows.
We get right into reward.
Right into reward. There was a lot to pack into this episode.
True.
So they had to do reward very early, and the mail talks about, are you skilled or are you just popular? And that's really funny knowing this challenge.
It's a good way to set it up.
Yeah. So they go to this reward challenge, and they have to fire arrows from a replica crossbow, and they have to hit their name. However, you don't get a certain number of set arrows. You have to donate your arrows in secret, but you cannot give it to yourself. You can give it to anyone else.
But it's not in secret. Like, it's, you're doing it secretly, but then the arrows are colored by the person, so you know exactly who gave arrows to
yeah.
who. I really thought we were going to be doing another survey challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I like this version a lot better.
This is a better way to do it.
I think it needs a little bit of tweaking because I think Courtney gets so many arrows because everyone thinks she'll be bad at it.
Uh-huh.
And I think you have to have a set. Like, if they were going to run this challenge back, I'd be like, give everyone 3 arrows and 5 arrows to give away.
Sure.
Because PG gets 1.
PG gets 1.
That sucks.
And it's from Courtney, of all people.
Yeah, she don't want her to feel bad. Or she's playing the jury. I think Courtney is underestimated, and she's been pretty smart about jury management. To the extent that she can be.
Sure.
As negative and sometimes mean as she can be.
Valid. Yeah, so they have to fire arrows from this crossbow. They have to hit their name, and it's kind of on, like, this checkerboard pattern thing where everyone's name is there, but it's not a safe bet. Like, these are small-ish squares.
Yeah,
so
it's hard to hit.
It's hard to hit, unless you're Todd.
Unless you're Todd.
Yeah, Todd is good at this for some reason. Anyway, PG gets 1 arrow, Denise gets 2, Courtney gets 12, Amanda gets 4, and Todd gets 6. Do you think people should have more red flags from this challenge than they originally did?
No, because I think everyone knows where they stand.
Okay.
Like,
well, if everyone knows where they stand, then things shouldn't go the way they did.
Well, it's not a revelation.
Okay.
For some reason, Denise has settled into whatever her game is, just trying to make it there by not being a threat. PG, there's nothing else she can do. I mean, she's trying to do things. It's not like she's, this can't set off any alarms when the alarms are already off.
Sure.
And I do think that Amanda and Todd gave their arrows mostly to Courtney because they thought that, again, that she would be really bad at this. So if you're looking at it and going, well, yeah, Todd thinks, if I'm Amanda, Todd thinks that I'm going to be better at this than Courtney is, and he wants to go. Now, hot take, I think Courtney was actually really good at this challenge.
Do tell.
Conspiracy theory time.
Okay.
I don't think Courtney was aiming for hers. What would you rather do? Would you rather win and have to pick the people coming with you, or would you rather be responsible for someone else winning, thereby ensuring that you get picked?
I think
she hits Denise and Todd with way too much consistency for me to think it was an accident.
Sure. I think it kind of settled into that because there was a bit of a randomness that
Fair. Okay.
happened.
Maybe
at the start.
It was she got the hang of it after a few arrows. But yeah, by the end, like, she is picking who's going on this challenge.
She kind of is. And you know what? She benefits from that because those are the two people that end up going. Courtney, who really distributes all the points. PG scores 0. Denise gets 1. And then eventually
Todd puts himself way ahead in the lead. Yeah. Let's not count him out. He got all 5 of his on himself.
He nailed 5 of 5 before missing his last shot.
Yeah.
That's,
oh, yeah, he had 6. That's
unbelievably
right.
impressive.
Yeah.
And then Courtney,
he's like, this is my side hobby.
Courtney just distributes these points willy-nilly. And we end up getting close with a 7-7 tie for Todd and Denise. And then the last one hits Denise.
You know, I just realized?
What?
So Todd had an almost perfect record with this weapon, right? And we agree this is a weapon.
Yeah.
So Todd is the battle twink.
There it is. Yeah, I knew that was going. Anyway. Yeah, Denise wins. She takes Courtney because Courtney gave her all the points. Yeah. And Todd, despite PG begging for please, please take me. Take me, please. Please.
Yeah.
I gave her Shaolin monks, and she gives me nothing.
It does feel shitty, man.
It feels
shitty.
I'd
be pretty pissed.
I would, too. I would be salty, but I don't know. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
In the end, it's her decision.
Not vote for her if she makes it to the final two.
That is an option.
I don't love people withholding their votes for somewhat petty reasons, but not getting picked twice
over is tough.
After you took somebody on a like such a life-changing reward blows my mind.
I can't blame Denise here, though, in that she feels so uncertain in her position with these people. For them to for her to take PG as a hey, thanks for doing what you did at the very end.
Denise is the one who makes the choice. It doesn't seem like it comes from a place of like, oh no, they'll think I'm going to betray them. She goes, I don't want PG to get any stronger.
Yeah, oh no. She's very much like trying to back her alliance here.
Denise is also doing the thing that I've hated in the past in Survivor and still kind of do, to be frank. The, oh, I'm second from the bottom. I need to sabotage the person on the bottom to make sure that they go home.
I need to pull the ladder up.
Yeah, rather than try to make it so that there's someone new on the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, PG and Amanda go back to camp, and boy, it's real awkward at that camp because, as we've discussed, these two haven't talked. Like, at all. The only thing that they've talked about really is at Tribal Council, where PG is kind of throwing, like, side jabs at Amanda.
Oh, PG comes to fight at Tribal Council.
Yeah. And again, she kind of has to, because she's at the bottom. She's got to do something.
Every time before Tribal Council, she reads The Art of War and prepares.
And Amanda's like, hey, you know what? Why do you dislike me so much?
Yeah, like, why are you so mean to me? And PG gives the worst non-apology. I hate these. I will call them out every time. I'm sorry if that hurt your feelings.
Yeah.
No, you don't even know what you're apologizing for. You're just saying bullshit.
Y'all need couples therapy.
Yes. Although they kind of get it by the end.
They kind of do. Yeah, and PG's like, I don't dislike you. Whoa. And Amanda says, you know, you haven't really talked to me at all. You always attack me at Tribal. And they just kind of hash it out.
So PG, by her own admission, can be bossy, though that's not really relevant here. Her other flaw in the game is defensiveness, which ironically is the same one Todd has.
Mm-hmm.
Amanda disarms this so fucking well. Like, to pick somebody that, I mean, she ends up voting her out anyway, but it keeps her options open.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't know what she's going to do at this point. At least, I don't think she does. And to be able to build this connection with somebody that you've been on the wrong foot with, that has a habit of being defensive, by coming to them directly, takes a level of emotional intelligence that is really undervalued on Survivor.
Sure. Honestly, and I understand the gut reaction to be a little defensive in a game about keeping your position and trying to always be on top.
I think the worst thing you can be in Survivor is defensive.
But I understand why it comes out.
Sure, yep. And yeah, you're hangry and tired and cold, and I'm not my best self when I'm any of those things.
You're not yourself when you're hungry.
No, I'm not. I'm an asshole.
Eat a Snickers. Wait, not you. You're going to die of diabetes.
No, sometimes I need medical Snickers.
This. All right.
I used to carry Snickers. Right now it's, what do I have in my backpack? I don't remember.
You heard him. Medical Snickers for all your ladies out there.
These are my medicinal Snickers.
Sir, you can't bring food in here. These are medical Snickers.
I have had that exact conversation before.
I believe that. Anyway, they hash it out. They come to a conclusion. They have a weird buddy cop extravaganza.
It's adorable.
It's great.
And I don't remember something like this happening before. I don't remember two people, maybe on reward, but certainly not left at camp, to bond like this quickly and this intensely.
I don't know that we've had it happen like this, where two people who don't like each other in a way like this are left together.
There's usually a third person.
Yeah, there's usually someone there to absorb this. And it just happened this way, and it forced them to come together and talk about their issues, and then they got over it. They had a great time. They found an Asian pear tree. They made dinner together. It was great. It was a good time. Amanda
says,
"Should
we start sending people in pairs to Exile Island that hate each other so they can become friends? We'll call it Friendship Island."
There you go. I was going to say that does defeat the purpose of Exile Island.
Maybe the true exiles were the friends we made along the way.
No, that's again, the opposite of exile.
Well, no. You can be exiled, like, not by yourself.
Yes.
But not in Survivor. Yeah, all right.
I mean, yeah. What's his name? Little French angry man.
Oh, Napoleon.
Napoleon got back from
his...
Or
like most French men.
Whoa, Jared. Whoa.
Come at me.
The Survivor Turnback Time podcast
hates
not...
France.
No.
I'm kidding. This is all a bit.
French Canada, though. I'm kidding. I'm French Canadian. Anyway, reward challenge. We talked about that already. Them go...
We've gone back to it. You're not the reward itself.
I read my note on the reward.
Yes.
They get their fancy private jet. They get to fly to the Great Wall of China. So cool.
I was like, of course they're going to use the Great Wall of China.
They had to.
Like, I didn't know when it was coming, but I knew it was coming.
It's there. You're not going to go all the way here and then you're like, oh.
Hey, Steven.
Yeah.
Does this reward kind of suck?
Whoa.
Hear me out.
Okay.
Think about the other rewards we've gotten.
Uh-huh.
Like going down a riverboat in China, seeing all this cool, like nature side of stuff. Obviously the Shaolin Temple, like that's legendary. The ancient village. Nope. Here is a table you sit at for a few hours that we first had to, I guess, drive you or something to an airport to fly out there.
Uh-huh.
By the time you get there, it's almost dark. And then you turn around the next morning, like, you spent more time traveling than they did at this reward. Like, it felt like a photo op more than an actual reward.
Yes. And that, I don't think it was timed super well. They probably should have done this earlier in the season when they could have done that. All right, let's go on this big trip and we're leaving right from Tribal Council. Let's go.
Yeah, because they don't leave right from Tribal Council.
No.
Which is how they got away with the Shaolin Temple and made that still good. Yeah. I mean, it's their fault they don't know what fucking hot pot is. But
yes.
But the rest of it, like, logistically, this is kind of a nightmare. And the last thing I would want to do on my Survivor reward is spend, like, 80% of it traveling.
But I'm never gonna complain that someone brought me to the Great Wall of China to experience this once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Well, but even additionally, like, this is a tourist thing. Like, you and I could go to the Great Wall of China. But I can't go to a Shaolin temple. It'd be much more difficult to go to that riverboat. It'd be really difficult, if not impossible, to go to that ancient village. Like, of all the other ones, eh.
You're right. And people clearly had opinions on this reward.
Yes, they did.
But, like...
I wonder if they had opinions on it for more than the food, but that was all that they could put in the episode.
To say that you slept on the Great Wall of China is nothing that you should shake a leg at.
Oh, it's cool. Don't just in comparison to all the other ones that we've had, because we've had amazing rewards.
We've had amazing rewards. There's so much to do in this area and in China that it's hard to cover in all of this. But the fact that they had to do the Great Wall of China, of course they did.
Yeah.
It makes sense. Unfortunate they had to rush through it. But also, like, you don't want to hike the Great Wall of China.
No, not necessarily.
Not when you're in Survivor.
Right. Yeah. We walk enough.
Yeah, anyway, yeah, they do their thing. They don't know how the hot pot works.
Was hot pot really, like, not known at all? Because none of the three of them know what to do with this. And Courtney's from New York City.
New York City. Salsa from New York City. Yeah, hard to say. I'm
2007.
I'm from the middle of nowhere. I certainly didn't know what this was.
I didn't either. In 2007.
Yeah. I know now.
Right.
And I would have been like, oh, yeah, just do this. But
I guess I just didn't realize how much that's a newer trend, if it is. Or like, you know, like Korean barbecue and stuff like that, where you're cooking your own meat at the table. I fucking love Korean barbecue.
Eat that shit right now.
Oh, want to get Korean barbecue?
Yes, but it's in the middle of the night, so we can't right now.
Yeah, that's true. We do record at 3 a.m.
That's, no.
New lore drop.
Okay. Anyway, my neighbors hate me. They do this. Courtney and Amanda just bitch the whole time.
It was interesting that Courtney took Todd for strategy.
Oh, sorry, not Courtney. Courtney and Todd bitch the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Courtney said that she took Todd on this for strategy, because Denise asked Courtney, who should we take?
Mm-hmm.
And she was basically like, I think Amanda's more forgiving than Todd.
Yes.
That, and I can't trust Todd as much to not like work behind back with PG.
An angry Todd is a dangerous Todd.
Yeah. And this is the hard thing of working with people that are difficult, is that Amanda has to always be the adult, or has to be the one that puts, you know, that is made to suffer for Todd's ego. I mean, it seems like it's been pretty balanced out before this, but it was just something to think about for maybe future seasons.
Sure. Yeah. You know what? It's a weird juxtaposition between that happening, them talking about that, and then Amanda having a great time back at camp with PG, right. Like catching fish, making a stir fry, having this great time, and then they get back. Well, okay, one, giving them iced coffee at the end of the day, was that weird to anyone or just me?
It is weird, but they had to get back on a plane, Steven.
But they were sleeping. It was right before they were going to sleep.
We didn't see them sleep on the Great Wall.
They had beds.
Oh, okay. You're right. You're right. I forgot about that. Yeah. Yeah, that is weird. Though you're probably so exhausted. You don't drink caffeine.
I don't drink caffeine.
If you drink caffeine, there's a certain level of like tiredness where the caffeine's not going to do anything.
All right. I'll take your word for it. I definitely, when I was drinking caffeine, had a Mountain Dew or something.
Wait, I'm not a good narrator of this. I have ADHD. Caffeine doesn't affect me like it affects other people.
Okay. Well,
damn it.
Damn it. Iced coffee is strong, right? Like, isn't that the thing of iced coffee?
It can be. Cold brew? You're thinking of cold brew.
Damn it.
Iced coffee, theoretically, is not that much or not any more stronger than a normal pot of coffee.
Michaela's about to burst in here and just slap me upside the head for not knowing these things. Oops.
They're going to come in with 2 cold brews and make you drink both of them.
Interesting moment that Todd says, we know we're catty, me and Courtney together, so we might as well go to the end together because people all hate both of us.
Did you forget that Denise is here?
Yes.
Todd, you are not reading this room well, although it doesn't cost him and Denise doesn't do anything about it. So I guess you did.
Denise literally says, someone's going to be left out. I just don't want it to be me.
And it's going to be if it's the two of them, Denise.
Uh-oh. Anyway, they come back.
The thing with people like Todd, and like to break down like what playing the game too hard means, I've said it a few times for those that... You just make sure that we're all on the same page.
Uh-huh.
If you're constantly backstabbing people, people are going to go, wait, but what's he saying when I'm not around? When I'm not talking to him, is he saying the same things about me? You have people in your alliance have to feel like the moves that you're making that backstab people are for your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And
what if I openly talk game in front of a person who is feeling a little underappreciated and just took you on this big thing and then just don't even worry about her or talk to her the entire time?
She doesn't have agency. It's fine. From Todd's perspective, she doesn't have any agency at all.
You don't have a vote.
Todd is such a difficult person to be in alliance with because there is a type of strategist that you don't need to trust them. You just need to know that what they're doing is in their own best interest. But what Todd has been doing in the past is not always in his own best interest. So he's both a strategist and a little bit of a wild card.
Mm-hmm.
I would not want to be in an alliance with Todd.
Todd is very smart.
Yes.
He's playing this game very competitively. But then also, he is sometimes led by his emotions to do these irrational things.
Yes.
And the two conflict a lot, but it does make him to be a wild card.
Trust and predictability go hand in hand, at least in like Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need to trust that somebody's going to do what's best for me. I need to trust that I can predict what they are going to do. But everyone around Todd is like, when he gets mad, we don't know what he's going to do. How have you not gotten rid of him in the last couple of episodes for that. I mean, I guess this is the episode to do it. Mm-hmm. They did, but this is the episode to do it.
Nobody pulls the trigger.
Jumping ahead a little bit, but do you really think that PG would be harder to beat in a final two than Todd?
So here's the thing. Yes and no.
Okay.
I do think that a large portion of that jury is PG's former tribe, that even if they don't necessarily like her, they may vote for her out of spite.
I guess three. Three of them would be. Yeah, Jamie, Eric, and Frosty.
And at that point, all you would need is one or two to go her way. And
you're right.
Suddenly, she's dangerous.
Because I was like, a bunch of people have told us that they do not like PG.
Yeah. I think to leave it at that would be a little unwise, that to just say, oh, she's a guaranteed to win. No, she's not.
No, I can see. The math is tough, though. Okay. Yeah, that's a good point.
It makes it more competitive if people just throw a fuck you vote that way.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, and what the fuck's John or Bear gonna do?
Who knows? Yeah, so that's funny. And then everyone gets back and they're like, where are PG and Amanda? We can't find her. Oh, there they are. They're coming back.
They start getting anxiety. I'm like, they've been alone the whole night. Why would, do you think they're going to jump out of the bushes and start stabbing you?
Yeah, they actually just hid in the cave, and they won't come out of the cave. It's like Stoop Kid. Never leaves his stoop. Cave girls never leave their cave.
Courtney's the cave girl, though.
Yeah, anyway, they come back, and then PG and Amanda sit and listen to them complain about the food. And you're like, you got to be fucking kidding me,
man. It's cooking. It's putting the meat in the hot water and letting it cook. Have the three of, I mean, Denise isn't complaining. I'm sure Denise did a lot of it and she's literally a lunch lady, but have y'all never cooked raw meat before? It's not that hard, especially in a soup.
Yeah. And so Denise is like kind of apologizing off to the side. And Denise says, yeah, we made these boiler meat sandwiches and Todd ate them all in the plane on the way back.
Dude,
that's brutal.
That is brutal. So we got confirmation you can bring food back from a ward, apparently.
I guess. I don't know. Every time, man, I'm like, no.
Like, surely
not.
That has to be it.
But the fact that they didn't makes me go, I'm still not sure.
Yeah, well, that would be really conniving of Denise if producer's like, hey, you gotta eat that. And then she goes, what? They ate them on the plane.
They ate them on the plane. They ate the sandwiches on the plane.
That is so fucked up, man.
Yeah.
To be like, nah, I'm just going to eat this food we brought back for people on the plane ride back.
There's got to be something. Because to just leave it at that is so underhanded.
Yeah. Well, just selfish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, like, Todd is selfish, at least in the game of Survivor.
Yeah.
Oh, we also got to mention plane rating. You remember, he was being a flight attendant for the takeoff to the Great Wall, and
stop.
I just thought it was very funny.
Stop.
No, you got that, right?
I didn't.
Oh, no, he was literally like, oh, welcome to Survivor Flight 14 tonight, or, like, whatever he was saying. It was pretty good.
I missed that. Okay. Cool. And we get immunity challenge. It's the leftovers challenge.
It sure is. And this time we have some demons to face.
We do.
So three of the five contestants have had challenges that embarrassed them or were major problems for them, which would be Denise with the balut,
yep,
which she falls to again.
Uh-huh.
PG with the bouncing ball,
uh-huh,
which she falls to again.
No, she doesn't.
No, sorry. No, she doesn't. No, she conquers that one. And Courtney with the rope chomping that she does not.
Doesn't get a chance
get
at.
To do. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of good stuff here. They do the throwing stars. They do the balut. They did the balance and the drum. They did the sword and the wooden disc puzzle as the end.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like you said, a lot of demons to go through here.
And this is one of my favorite leftovers challenges.
It's pretty good. And mostly because there isn't a pace to any of these.
Yeah.
Like, you don't jump from one immediately into the other. It's a, all right, here you go. You did the thing. All right, these four move on. These three move on. These two move on.
Well, weirdly enough, it helps that some of the challenges this season have felt almost a little shallow, where like the ball bouncing is cool, but there wasn't a lot of complexity to it. It wasn't multi-leg. And so it works really well as one leg of a challenge.
Yes. Yeah. So we start with the stars, and PG only gets 2 points, which is much lower for... They only get 3 shots, but 2 points is one hit on the two-point target.
Yeah.
There's a five-point target on there, so...
Nobody's ever hit that. There's a 3.
Good point. Good point. Yeah, PG gets 2, Denise gets 6, Amanda gets 3, Courtney hits 2, and then you're like, oh, there's a chance. And then Todd gets 1 point.
One, you're right.
And we talk earlier, Amanda says, if he doesn't win, I may have to think about getting rid of Todd. There's your opening right away.
Yeah, so I'll just talk about this now.
Yeah.
I went back and watched the last time on from the previous episode when I got done with this one. Because I went, I remember there being really explosive stuff in that next time on. That is the most fucking selectively edited for like fucking clickbait bullshit in a way that I do not like. Brackets, non-complimentary. Remember, it's a little bit later, Todd has the confessional of like, I'll be fucking pissed off. It'll be a great idea, though. They cut that just for the I'll be fucking pissed off and put that in the next time on.
Yeah.
They put Amanda's like, I'm going to have to get rid of him. They put in Courtney's like, am I having survivor anxiety right now when they get back to camp? Like, they make it seem like there's this big blow up at camp in the next time on.
And there's nothing. Episode,
and there's nothing. It is not that at all.
Yeah.
Motherfuckers.
Survivor be doing that.
Oh, they got me. Damn it.
Yeah, then we move on to the Bloot, and Denise gives up. Like, Jeff is ripping her a new one for giving up.
Jeff, fuck you. It's not like she hasn't tried and failed at this before.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, there is something hardwired into Denise that cannot do this. Don't make it worse for her.
Courtney was really funny here. Do we have to do this if she's quitting? Yes.
Courtney's yes, you do. Really funny, man. I went back to our first episode and like listened, the first time I've done this, to like what I thought of a couple of people that are still around.
Mm-hmm.
And I fucking hated Courtney.
Oh, yeah, you did.
I love Courtney.
Okay. I mean, you know what? Props on you for saying, you know what? I've changed my mind. That's yeah. fun.
And she's also changed and grown a little bit. Like,
yeah.
She had like a
or holier... we've seen more of her.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think it's getting more comfortable because she had a really like holier than thou attitude the first couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. And like, she's still... Oh, like complains a lot and all of that, but she's like having fun and is much easier to be around, it would seem.
Yeah. And we got rid of Jean Robert, so that,
yeah, that helped a lot. That
changes a lot. Yeah, so Denise loses on the Bloot. We it's a $1 million Bloot in front of you. No, it's not, Jeff. Calm down.
No, it's
not. We move on to the drum and ball game that we played earlier, but it's just one drum and you gotta bounce it up to the pot. Yeah.
Amanda's great at this.
Amanda's great. PG does well enough to beat Courtney. Yeah. So there you go. And then
Courtney performed pretty well, though. Yeah. I will say, like, for somebody that struggled a lot in team challenges, she's been doing okay in individual as well.
Yeah. Plus, I didn't really want to see her do the sword thing anyway.
I really did.
It would have been absolutely dreadful.
It would have been really funny.
She would have not done well, and Amanda would have run the table on her.
Do you think she might have just maybe not tried super hard at the ball bouncing because she knew it was coming?
Possibly.
Because if I was in her position, I probably, like, and I knew how badly I was about to fail at that, maybe it's just better to lose here.
I mean, it's valid. Yeah, so then we do the sword chippity-choppity.
This shit has to stop it.
Yeah. We're freeing the puzzle pieces, but it looks a little bit less intense than the original challenge.
Yeah.
And Amanda gets through her ropes first.
They're cutting through just a rope and not wood covered rope.
Yeah. She's seemingly doing really well on this puzzle. She falls apart a little bit, like letting PG back into this, but eventually she comes through, she wins, and the bench was having a great time.
It had a little bit of drama in there, which we love to see.
Uh-huh. And Jeff calls out the bench too, like, there's clearly a favorite for who the bench wants to win.
There's no secrets.
No secrets.
This, you're right, this does have a little bit of Terry from Panama, except instead of every episode from here all the way back to when she was around at the merge, it's one episode.
Well, just you wait till the memory walk. Maybe we'll bring it back around.
even still, it isn't for our six fallen episodes comrades. In a row.
So for our fallen comrades, we're going to do like a brief little message for everyone. And then we're going to have
45 minutes of PG.
A 45 minute monologue of PG. PG, how we barely knew her. Oh, anyway. Yeah. So Amanda wins. PG's really disappointed. She came so close. Sharp disappointment as I'm next on the chopping block for sure. She knows. Everyone knows.
Yeah.
Todd goes off about the rice for whatever reason. If you're like, hey, we got this on lock. Also, who the fuck ate all the rice, man? Like,
You know who it was. You also know that you were eating way more food. And also, you have been around when people have said that they eat more rice when people are on rewards.
Uh-huh.
You know. You did it. You've done it.
Yeah. And Denise explains to us that Todd has made enemies on the jury. I stand better chance against him than I do against PG.
It's so interesting because we're still in this realm of good people are favorites over people who played well. In at least by these contestants' analysis,
mm-hmm.
like Todd has played a good game. I'd be much more worried about going up against Todd than pretty much anybody else. If I was in that camp, from our perspective, I think Amanda's played a better game. But in the camp, Amanda's played a much more subtle game. So I'd be more worried about Todd.
Sure. And you know what? Todd is doing a good job of kind of saying this to the jury that, I mean, later in the episode, he says, yeah, a lot of people in the jury don't like me. I've made some enemies over there. So you know, it would be in people's best interest to take me to the final. Hint, hint, wink, wink. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Do you believe that? Or do you think he's saying that? I mean, I think he's saying that as a strategy, but do you think that he's right that he is an easier person to beat than the other people around him, I guess?
I think there's a kernel of truth to it that he is definitely playing up.
Okay.
Like, as he talked about before, he wants to go with Courtney. Same enemies, same problems. Like,
less agency.
Yeah. Amanda, it's kind of the same, but maybe a little bit less on the forward-facing hatred from other people. So, I don't know, man. It's not a bad move. And Todd asks Courtney, is PG lobbying at all? Nope. It's not happening. She is. She's trying to make moves, but people are not really giving her much.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, Tribal Council. Do you have anything from Tribal Council?
Is Denise one of the worst narrators of the game for the jury have seen?
Yes.
I think I'm sure somebody could pull somebody from an earlier season, but I can't remember feeling like somebody says the wrong thing at every tribal more often than Denise. Denise gets asked why she brought who she brought her, or it comes up. And she says, for Courtney, she's like, well, you know, she hasn't eaten anything and blah, blah, and whatever. And I'm like, Denise, she won the game for you. That's all you had to say. That Courtney hit my spot with the arrows a lot, and so I took her. Why do you always paint yourself in the most unflattering light possible in front of the jury every single time?
She is the non-derogatory term of telling it like it is. Like, she just says what she is thinking, and it's not from any strategy point. She just is saying. And like you said, not a very good storyteller.
I think she's not a good public speaker.
Yes.
Which is fine.
Which is fine.
But it's a very important thing to have if you're going to try to win the game of Survivor.
We just haven't seen people like this. Because there have been people like this. They just don't usually make it this far.
Yeah. And they're not usually this nice of people.
Yes. So suddenly we're in this weird mix of, hey, Denise, we want to root for you. We want you to say the things to put you in a good spot. But she doesn't have the ability to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like John Robert left rakes behind, so she decided to step on them.
Oh, hey, a rake.
PG saying that she was a positive person made me laugh out loud by myself in my apartment.
I mean, you, James, Todd, Courtney, all of them were just laughing during that point, so you're not the only one.
And then the bonding question Jeff has of like, oh, Amanda, you haven't really gotten to talk to PG too much before this. Too much, Jeff. I know tribal councils are long. I know they're edited down. That's a weird fucking question.
It is a weird question, isn't it? But
like, why would you know that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know that everyone knows that the producers tell you stuff, but that one feels so narrative driven.
So ham-fisted. Weird. Like, hey, look, I know you guys hung out and talked and were best friends.
You just told everyone that they had a great time while the other three were on reward.
I think that one is fair as long as you know that the vote is going a certain way.
Sure.
If you're like, if she's wavering, Amanda is wavering, or even if Denise is wavering, you don't ham fist that one in there.
Yeah, I would hope not.
Otherwise, you might be swaying the game. Yeah. And, yeah. Amanda says, I respect that PG's a strong fighter and that she made it this far. Courtney says something about how can you say this? What was she talking about? How can you say that after 36 days outside and all this craziness?
Oh, that nobody... Doesn't...
Yeah, that nobody doesn't deserve to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I agree with.
I agree, too. If you're there and you've made it this far, you deserve to be there.
You might not deserve to be the winner, but you deserve to be there.
Yeah. Yep.
And deserve is a weird frame... that like the game has been obsessed with since season one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, does somebody deserve to win? Like, I guess it's not like it is common in other competitions too, but I'll use sports since obviously like Steve and I love football and we're at that time of year. Like, you don't ask if somebody deserved to win the Super Bowl. Like, if they won it, then they did for the most part. Like, I can't think of anywhere it's like, oh, they kind of tripped over their own dick and got there. And I know that Survivor's more subjective than that, but I don't know.
Did Eli Manning deserve to win the Super Bowl over an almost undefeated New England Patriots Tom Brady team?
Yes, because he did it.
He did.
Ball don't lie.
And I was very happy that he did. So there we go.
So yeah, and I don't know like where to come down on that. But the question of deserving is both overused by Survivor and also still fascinating to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird line.
We're going to continue to dance that line for the rest of time.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then PG says, I think some people deserve it who played hard over people who lie and cheat. And it just pans over to Todd and Courtney, who are just like, she's talking about us.
As if those things are mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
Playing hard and lying.
And then we vote. Yeah. Do you have any notes before we vote?
Nope.
Okay, cool. PG's voted out in a sweep. Is she gone?
Yeah, she gone.
How do you think she does in future Survivor?
I think she'd do a lot better in past Survivor. Her whole talk about, like, I've played honorable, I fought so hard, like, it feels pre-All-Stars.
Mm.
It feels like to Africa or Marquesas or, I mean, I guess, like, maybe a little bit like Guatemala or Vanuatu, but it doesn't feel... doesn't feel like it kept up with where Survivor's at, even for China, which isn't, I mean, we're in season 15. There's a lot more to go.
That there is.
Future Survivor, like, I mean, she'd be playing with a bunch of Todds. Todd ran circles around her. Amanda ran circles around her. PG didn't realize that Amanda knew that there was an idol despite being the one to give it to her.
Do you think she could... throwing out scenarios here. Do you think her knowing that the game has changed will would that have affected how she talks to people and
It could. It very well could. I think being defensive and being a little bit bossy by her own analysis, I hesitate to call women bossy often unless it's like the architect from last season who was... She also said it about herself, actually.
Yeah.
But PG says that about herself, and I tend to agree. Those are really big flaws to overcome in Survivor.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 5 is really high up there in terms of position. I don't see her getting farther than that. I think most of the time, like, she overperformed.
Okay.
I think she has a decent head on her shoulders, but the things you need to go far in the game, I don't think are at the core of who PG is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to get another shot because she is coming back for Second Chances Cambodia.
I called it out. I said maybe like Second Chances or something.
You did. I tried to keep my face from lighting up. Like, that was a good call, Jared.
Hell yeah.
Way to go.
I'm excited for that. That will be interesting because the game will be very different.
Mm-hmm. So her and 19 other people are coming back.
That's a 20-person season?
20-person season.
Jesus. I'm okay with a larger tourney season, though, because you already know the people.
Yeah. And people were literally voted into it slash not voted in. Yeah. So there could have been more.
Wow. I'm excited for her for that one.
All right.
Yeah. Because and all of that I just said does come off as really harsh. And it is. It is a snapshot in time. And I had high hopes for PG early in the season. I guess part of the harshness is I was a little disappointed that she didn't adapt her game.
Okay. And your protagonist of the episode?
The whole episode's PG.
Yeah.
From the moment it starts in the recap, it's PG all the way down. I will say, though, I'm sad that she didn't make it one more vote. Because she was the 12th person voted out. And she could have been PG-13.
I did do that math myself. Yeah.
She did have another cope-ass post-game, though, which was like, they voted me out because I'd be too hard to beat in the final two. And I guess with what you and I talked about, that feels less cope. But it's still like, I hate when people go home and they're like, oh, I was just too good for Survivor.
I was going to win, and then they stole it from me.
You know who's better? Everyone that's still sitting there.
Ooh.
Not always. That's not true. Good players often go home before some players that haven't played as strong of a game.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Ball don't lie.
Ball don't lie. Ball don't bumper. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast. Jared, what would you like to promote?
I am almost through the final season of Sex Education on Netflix.
Oh,
and
nice.
It's very good. I really liked the first three seasons, but I did that thing where I watched it all, and then they didn't have more of it for a while, and then I didn't come back to it. But I was a walking corpse Monday and Tuesday, so I needed to lay on the couch and take an edible and watch TV. So I did for a couple days.
Nice.
And it's really good. I recommend you watch it.
Okay.
Watch it in a place that you can be alone or with people that aren't going to be offended by stuff, because the show is called Sex Education. They show a lot of stuff that isn't pornographic, but it is like
sexual of nature.
Exactly. Yeah. Yep. You're going to see the opening episode of season four has one of the most cringe things I've ever seen that involves somebody's dick being shown to a lot of people. And it's just there. It's just there.
They actually show it?
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. So it's like, don't watch it at work. What about you, Steven?
Before we get into what I'm going to promote, I do want to follow up that while I was also sick, unconscious, I did the thing that Jared has been begging me to do for a long time. I finished Attack on Titan.
You did?
I did. I watched the two movie-length final episodes.
Oh, what did you think? I forgot that's all you had to get through.
I'm glad that I finished it. Mm. I'm glad that I've put in the time. Minor spoilers here. Well, major spoilers. It's the end.
It's the end.
Yeah. Aaron's a little bitch at the end.
Yeah, he is.
Like,
he's always been a little bitch.
And like, oh, man, I don't know. The whole narrative of like, it was his fate. He's seen, he knows all of time. He can't change it. Made me so angry. Because like, it shows him trying to change it. Like, well, not even like thinking about trying to change it.
My interpretation of that was that it didn't have to, like, it isn't a forced, you have to do this. This is the only actions you can take.
Uh-huh.
It's, I saw the other actions and they ended worse for the people I care about.
Sure. He Dr. Stranged it and there was only one good solution, but
this is the one I wanted.
Yeah.
I would rather save my friends than the rest of the world.
But then like, I get that this is a war show and it's about war, but the resolution being that like, hey, we have thus stopped war for a small fraction of time while you're alive. Great. But war will continue to happen because that's what war does.
Oh, it's bleak.
It's very bleak.
Yeah.
And then like the subtle hinting that like, oh shit, we're about to start the Titan shit again with the very last image.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh man, I thought we were done with this shit.
No, because every time in history that we thought we're done with this shit, it gets bad again.
Valid. Okay, anyway, what I'm actually going to promote is wacky, unnecessary crossover episodes like Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
And Attack on Titan?
No. Always Sunny in Philadelphia did a crossover episode with Abbott Elementary because they're both set in Philadelphia. And I went,
oh,
who let those characters anywhere near children?
That's hilarious.
It's wild.
I also, you know what, fuck it, I'll double promote. It's Always Sunny is amazing.
It is, but man, those characters should not be around children.
No.
For my co-host Jared, this is Steven.
My host Steven, this is Jared.
Bye-bye.
Finale coming soon.
Coming soon.